Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson Fixer brings Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB, Inside MLB.
Good evening, Inside MLB fans. My name is Benson Fixer, and I'll be your host tonight for the show. It is Monday, a new week, May 16th, 2016. An exciting weekend of baseball, and a lot of things to get to. I know what most of you are thinking, right? We're going to have to get to the Odor Bautista fight. But to start off, I'm going to go a different route than most sports talk shows have gone to today, especially the baseball ones. Most of them jump right into the Rougned Odor as a Bautista fight. But I like to do things different here on Inside MLB. Spruce up, because I know if you're a baseball fan like I am, you've probably been hearing about the fight all day. And sometimes it gets, you know, redundant listening to it over and over and over again. So to start off the show today, we're going to get into talking about the Tigers pitching, as you might have seen in the episode description. We're going to be talking about how the Tigers' rotation, it's starting to look better over the last eight games, especially the rotation. Right now, in the last eight games, they have a 3.88 ERA. But their team, it's really not looking too good right now. They are 16-21, 2-8 in their last 10, but they did salvage a game against the Orioles yesterday where they had some big hits. And one of the big things that the Tigers, not only the rotation, they are excited because Jordan Zimmerman is going to be on the mound tonight, and he's pitching his mind out lately. So that's good for the Tigers. But another good thing for the Tigers coming in right now is Cameron Maybin, and he is set to return to the Tigers lineup. And a lot of people think, I think, misunderstand the value of Cameron Maybin, because in the minor leagues this year, he's played 27 games. Listen to this. A lot of people think that Cameron Maybin is going to like turn around this Tigers team. Well, news for you guys, it doesn't look too promising. Right now, Maybin, in the minor leagues this year, he's batting 194. That is pretty bad. 194 with 11 RBIs. So 11 RBIs is somewhat good in 27 games, but if you're only getting a hit 19.4% of the time, I don't think it's going to translate to the big league level. You never know, though. He's a solid outfielder, and I think he might be a little bit of an upgrade over Anthony Gose, who they just sent down to AAA. He would be an upgrade because he has a more veteran experience, but he is still relatively young. Most of you probably remember him from his Padres days. That's what I remember most, but if you remember, he played on the Braves last year. So Cameron Maybin, he'll be set to return to the Tigers lineup tonight. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. I think he's just a defensive stop holder, because Anthony Gose is obviously the center fielder of the future. But an option I think the Tigers could possibly use is throw Justin Upton in the center field. I know he hasn't been playing there in a while, but he can play a good center field. And if Cameron Maybin isn't doing well in the lineup, that might be a viable option for them, and it might possibly work out. And obviously, the Tigers are just trying to find something right now because they have really not been doing too well. And Mike Ilitch is probably not going to, you know, sit around and wait for his Tigers to figure things out, because he spent so much money in the offseason. And if he's willing to do that, then the Tigers just can't produce. And we'll get into Brad Ausmus a little bit later. And if he's not, or if he is or isn't on the hot seat, what Ilitch could do with him. Because that would definitely be interesting. And it could be bad for the Tigers. It definitely could be. But if the rotation can turn around, if Jordan Zimmerman can sort of lead the pack, Sandoval Sanchez can compete day in and day out, you know, Pelfrey also, it might be surprisingly good. We expected this team to not be at this point right now. If the Twins weren't so bad, I mean, they'd probably be in last place in most divisions. They would be some divisions that they wouldn't be. You get the AL West, the Astros at 15-24. In the American League East, they'd be in last place. Arizona, though, in the National League West, who they were doing pretty well recently, they'd be in last place there. Right now, they're 17-23. You go to the NL East, and they'd obviously be in last. They'd be in fourth place because, you know, the Braves 9-27 sitting there at a .250 winning percentage. And I was actually doing a thing today. I was calculating, you know, who's on pace to do what. Listen to this: the Braves are only on pace to win 40 games this year. They are on pace for their record to be 40-125. 2. That's pretty bad. Then you go to the NL Central, and they would also be in last place. So, obviously not a good season for the Tigers so far, and it might get worse, but if the rotation can turn around and maybe can provide some help, then it might work out. Okay, I'll finally get to it. I'll talk about it. I'll talk about the Rougned Odor and the Jose Bautista brawl yesterday, but I'm going to go about it a different way. First, I'm going to set the scene, then I'm going to ask 5 questions. It'll be called 5 per fighting, right? We're going to answer 5 questions that probably are on your mind that you might want to know the answer to. And so we will discuss. So let's set the scene. October of last season, Jose Bautista, he comes up to the plate against Sam Dyson, and he hits a home run, the biggest home run in forever, since the Joe Carter walk-off home run in Game 6 for the Blue Jays, and the place absolutely goes crazy. Bautista, in the heat of everything, has one of the best bat flips of all time, and the Rangers take exception to that, so the whole Rangers team. And ever since then, it's sort of been like, what are the Rangers going to do? Are they going to get back in Jose Bautista for this bat flip? And it finally happened yesterday with Bush. He came up to face Jose Bautista, and Bautista's final at-bat of the series, he plunked him. And some theories might be why it happened then, is so the Blue Jays can't take matters into their own hands and do something back. Now, unless they meet in the playoffs again, the Blue Jays and the Rangers are not going to play each other until next season. So, I mean, around this time next year, we might be talking about how the Blue Jays are going to get back at Odor, and then the cycle is just going to keep going on and going on. And one of the more interesting things in baseball is the Blue Jays and Rangers, they are really developing an intense rivalry, and it is just shown in this ball. I mean, this isn't your everyday division rivalry. I mean, they're not in the division. They only play each other 2 times a year. 3 times a year, as they've already finished their season series. And, I mean, a couple years ago, you asked me Blue Jays, Rangers, I'd say, why would I watch that? I want to watch Red Sox, Yankees. I want to watch Dodgers, Giants. I want to watch these matchups. I don't want to watch that. But with the high, scoring offenses that those two teams bring, then it's really an exciting game. You also have to factor in the possibility of constant retaliation. And if you like that kind of stuff, then you might want to tune into them, especially if they play in the playoffs. That'd be beautiful. It would be really interesting that it's one of the bigger storylines of the day. I mean, news, like regular news stations, I was watching it this morning, they're headlining with Rougned Odor and Jose Bautista. I mean, you just don't see this. It's one of the more heavily talked about baseball things, like, literally ever. I mean, the World Series might compete it, but regular season, this is the pinnacle of media coverage that baseball is really getting, and it's good for the sport, but it's also not good for the sport, because you don't want to see kids mimicking these players, going at it like they did. And Rougned Odor, he is actually a repeat offender in the minor leagues. Actually, a similar play like this happened, except he was in Jose Bautista's position. He made the hard slide, and then he took exception to the middle infielder, and he just started throwing his right hand fist at everybody, and the right fist that obviously landed one of the best punches in baseball, but history, and Jose Bautista. But one of the more impressive things, actually, I want to say, is that Jose Bautista, I mean, I'm extremely surprised he did not have broken jaw, because Rougned Odor absolutely crushed him with that right hand. One of the best, I think, punches I've ever seen, and pretty impressive that he didn't break his jaw and he actually stayed on his feet. And Jose Bautista talked about it after the game. Pretty interesting there. So now we are going to be talking about what should happen to Rougned Odor. And the question that I'm going to ask myself is, will Rougned Odor be suspended at least 8 games for his role in Sunday's brawl? And I think he will be suspended 8 games. I think it should be 10. Now, if Jose Bautista's jaw has been broken, I might be saying around 30 games. Because a lot of people look at this and they may be put a low number on it. But I think above 8 games, that's where the disciplinary ends of Major League Baseball. They need to make their stand of that. They need to make an example out of Rougned Odor. They can't let this thing keep going on in their game, because the game is so great, and you don't want to see this happening. Even though it might be good for media coverage and everything, Commissioner Manfred does not want to see this happening. He's not going to condone it, no matter the amount of media coverage. And he will be suspended for more than 8 games. But one of the things that is sort of bad for position players, you get a position player suspended for 10 games, you know, he's out for 2 weeks. You get a starting pitcher like Bush, if he's probably going to be suspended some amount. I mean, if he would be suspended 10 games, or if a starting pitcher would be suspended 10 games, he's only missing 2 starts. It's 2 versus 10. So maybe what Major League Baseball should try to do, in my opinion, if you're looking for fair discipline, if you're looking to keep the game fair, position players, regular day position players, they play game in and game out. Starting pitchers, though, they take the mound once every 5 days. So if you're going to suspend a position player 8 to 10 games, and I think, personally, you should suspend a pitcher the equivalent amount. And sadly for them, the equivalent amount would be pretty surprising number, actually, 40 to 50 games. And it actually would make sense proportionally, because if a player is missing 8 to 10 games, they are missing 8 to 10 games. If a starting pitcher is missing 8 to 10 games, I mean, they're on the bench usually. They're not going to be there, but they wouldn't be playing regardless. And Major League Baseball might want to take that into account in the next labor deal that'll be coming up. And it's just a thought, because position players are the ones that get the bad things. Because a pitcher, he can go up there throwing a 98-mile-per-hour heater at a player, and there's nothing you can do about it if you're the batter. But if you are the position player and you get into a fight out there like Fernando Odor did, then you miss 8 games no matter what. You miss the 8 to 10. It's just the way it goes. And Rob Manfred is seriously taking consideration the fact about that. Next question. Was it pro or not so pro that the Rangers waited until Bautista's final at-bat in the series to retaliate? Now, my opinion on this is, it was like, come on, what are you thinking? If the Rangers wanted to make a statement, I say first at-bat Bautista, maybe first at-bat at home, just plunk him. Come inside on the first pitch and do it. If you don't want to make a bold statement, you're all macho and everything, then do it in the Rogers Center. Do it in their place. Because, honestly, that would probably have been the biggest statement, because the Rangers, obviously, they're not that was a safe environment. They remember the ALDS. They remember all the stuff being thrown at them. They don't want any more stuff thrown at them. So I understand why they did it. I understand why Jeff Banister probably gave down the orders to do it at this moment in time. I thoroughly understand that. But I think it was not the right way to go about it. I think the right way to go about it was to plunk him right away. And the Blue Jays, they actually did get back at the Rangers, you could say. First guy that came up the following inning, they got back at him. So I think it might escalate next year, then we'll see what the Blue Jays do to Rougned Odor. Because Jeff Banister did it this time, because the Blue Jays have no chance to do anything about it this season, and they probably won't be doing anything in the playoffs, because playoff games, are, you know how crucial they are. You don't want to give the team an extra out, give a runner on base immediately. That's just not how it works. And Jeff Banister, I think he picked the right time to do it from a logistical standpoint, if you don't want any of their players getting hurt. So that's just my opinion on that. The next sort of thing, question that I'm going to be asking is, was this fight good for baseball? And obviously with all the media coverage and everything, and I think it actually was good for baseball, but to a certain extent. You don't want to see this happening once or twice every week. But if it does happen every once or twice a week, the TV ratings might go up. The ratings might go up. The tickets might be higher. I mean, there are more people going out to the games, because you have to admit it, the people of America and, you know, Toronto, Canada, they like to see, you know, fights go down. And that's good for baseball, because a lot of times when you go to a game, you can sort of see these rich millionaires with those fancy cars in those garages, and you might just see them, you know, going out there. But to see this happen, you at least know that when you're a fan, they have a passion for the game. They have a passion for the fans, for the city, to do well for them. And I think this is just a perfect example of it. And it is good for baseball, because it is creating another rivalry, the Blue Jays and the Rangers. That's a real rivalry. And it's going to be exciting for many years down the line, because they don't play each other that often. And the cycle is just going to keep on going, retaliation after retaliation, until something ends it. Maybe a retirement will end it. Maybe some big suspension will end it. But we will find out when we cross that bridge. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to ask ourselves two more questions. And those are, if last season's side rules were in effect, would this brawl escalate, and did Rugden Odor land the best baseball punch in baseball history? We'll take a quick 30-second break on Inside MLB. Get to those two questions next. All right, we're back on Inside MLB, and it's now time to answer those two questions about the Rugden Odor and Jose Bautista brawl. First question, if last season's slide rules were in effect, or if the Chase Utley rule did not exist, would this brawl have escalated? And I personally think it would have, because, I mean, the all-time great fights, I mean, a lot of them have been at second base, guys trying to break up a double play. And a lot of the middle infielders, they take exception to that because, I mean, you saw last year, Chase Utley, Jung Ho Kang, all those guys go down to traumatic injuries. Chase Utley obviously was the one that caused the injury. Now, that being said, if last season's side rules were in effect, I think this brawl would have escalated because this year the double play counted. The inning was over. But now that last year, there would have been no double play, and he would have gone second or third base on that play. But since last season's side rules are not in effect this year, then you see what happened. Because I think Rugden Odor would have taken even more exception to that, and more players would have been involved in a bigger fight. And especially think on the Rangers side, it would have been escalated more, not necessarily on the Blue Jays side. Because on the Blue Jays side, they realize, hey, we just got doubled up on a would have been a good slide last year, but with the new rules and everything, it was not a good slide. It was not a clean slide. It was, in fact, a dirty slide. So, yes, if this was last season's slide rules, if they were in effect, no doubt in my mind, this brawl would have definitely escalated to a whole nother level because, I mean, it's a one-run game, and then you get guy in scoring position with one out, no, two outs. And you never know what can happen after that because the Rangers, they did go on to win. And we might be asking the question, if the Rangers didn't go on to win and the Blue Jays would have won, was plunking Jose Bautista worth it? Obviously, I mean, they could probably say it was worth it now because, you know, they went on to win the game and they got the retaliation. And the Blue Jays can't do anything about it. They have to sit on their hands and wait until next year. And maybe those long months of waiting, it might retract the hatred, but some of us obviously didn't, and if they meet in the playoffs, I don't think the hatred will ever end. Maybe it definitely will not end next year, or in my mind, for the foreseeable future. Just my humble opinion. Okay, next question. Did Rugden Odor land the best baseball punch in all of baseball fight history? And I'm going to say he did. He punched him square in the face, and glasses fell off, the helmet fell off. The only other thing that could have happened, he could have fallen down or been knocked out cold. But he did none of that. I think I talked about a little bit earlier. Congratulations on Jose Bautista's part because he did not go down. And he said in the post game he could have injured him back. And I think he probably could have. But Adrian Beltre, if you didn't see, he ran up to Bautista, started hugging him. I mean, pretty much to hold him back. Do not go after Odor. I think it was a good job by Beltre because Bautista, they're saying he might be suspended. I don't think he should be suspended. But if Bautista would have went back at Odor, Bautista definitely would have, you know, been suspended longer than he might be. I don't think he should be, but it definitely is a possibility. Okay, I'm pretty sure you are sick and tired of me hearing about this. Next thing, Army softball, their star player, their captain, hopped the catcher to win the game the other day. And if you've not seen the video, I highly suggest you go see it. But the question is, should players be allowed to hop the catcher? Now, in Major League Baseball today, most of the time you're not going to be forced to hop the catcher, but if the situation ever does arise, should you hop him? Now, it depends. If they have their helmet on, I say go for it. If they don't have the helmet on, some bad things could happen. Because if you go over the catcher, and obviously you're trying to get to home plate, what if, you know, the catcher's immediate reaction, if he's in his crouch and he's, like, trying to get you out, and you're trying to go hopping over him, then the immediate reaction of the catcher, go up. Now, the player with his metal spikes on, closest to the head, isn't going to have enough time to react and say, oh, I have to move up. Gravity doesn't work like that. So, therefore, should Rob Manfred look at this and see what happened at Army and possibly ban hopping the catcher? Because, I mean, you would just hate to have an injury like that happen. And I think the only way it would happen is if something like this happened in Major League Baseball. And that's usually the case. A lot of rules that are created, like the new catcher rule and the Chase Utley rule, guess what? They all happen because of major traumatic injuries. If those injuries never happened, none of these rules would have existed. Because baseball, they learn by example. It's actually a pretty smart way. It's the actual classic engineering process. You build a product. The product is baseball. You test the product by playing so many games. And if things go wrong, then you change the rules in the offseason, and things get better the following year. But there's always some drawback to that. And then they make more rules and more rules and more rules, and the game gets more complex and better. That's the beauty of it. And should players be allowed to hop the catcher? And I don't think it should be. I think it should be black and white. It shouldn't be if the helmet's on or if the helmet's off. It should be no. I know it's exciting for the game. I know baseball fans, they sort of get mad about all these new rules. Now it's not exciting for the game and all that. But at the end of the day, it's good for the game because you don't want to see your starter player get injured. What if, like, you know, Yadier Molina's trying to go up and he's, you know, what if his career's over? I mean, that gash to the head can cause major brain damage and all these bad things. And baseball does not want to be responsible for that because it's on their field. And if something happens and goes wrong, baseball definitely does not want to be accountable for the bad things. Simply ban the act of hopping the catcher. Make it simple. Doesn't matter about the helmet on or helmet off. And then if they do hop, them automatically out. Just like if the catcher doesn't give them a place to get in there, then he's safe. But what if this happens? The catcher is blocking the plate, okay? And the player decides, you know, to hop over the catcher. What happens then? That's the real question I think we have to ask ourselves. My ruling on that, if I was an umpire, is simply this. If that ever were to happen, me as an umpire, I would say the catcher blocked the plate first. And after that, in response to the blockage of the plate, the player hopped that. But then the manager, it would probably be a rough situation. Then Major League Baseball would have to deal with that. And they'd have to create another rule. See, I'm right now looking long-term, down the road for baseball, trying to help them out, you see? But I definitely think stop the hopping on the catcher is too dangerous for baseball, and eventually something like that will happen, block, jump, just call him safe because the catcher blocked the plate first. But then what happens if the player lands on the catcher's head when that happens as well? What do you do then? And that becomes an even more tricky situation. And then the odds of these happening are probably slim, but crazier things have happened in baseball, and one of the crazier ones if that ever were to go down, if the rule would ever be made, and it probably will be made, because eventually somebody's going to get injured, because the catchers, they love throwing their masks off. I mean, it's just a natural instinct, and one of the funny things I've been watching baseball lately, and John Jaso, who's recently converted to a first baseman, he was going to catch a ball in foul play, and just like a catcher would do, you know, he just tossed off his hat. So he had a smile about it. He got the ball. It was all fun and games. And it's just a cool tidbit that you might want to know about if you are a baseball fan. All right, let's get into talking about a struggling player right now. Carlos Gomez. Right now, let's take a look at his stats. He's batting at a 182 average. No home runs. 486 slugging. And listen to this. This is the most alarming, I think. 34.8% strikeout rate. And I think the Astros still have to take into consideration not putting him in the lineup, because you can have a guy going out there who's batting 182 and striking out 35% of the time. It just doesn't work like that. You have to take him out of your lineup. Now, he's not going to like that, but I think it's the only way to wake him up. Because if you don't wake up somebody like this, then his career could be in jeopardy because he is a free agent after this year. He obviously does want to make some money going forward. And if Carlos Gomez continues not hitting a home run on May 16th and batting at 182, striking out 35% of the time, he's not going to be making big bank. He might not even be playing for a team next year. Might be going on a minor league contract, which is not always expected when he was a pretty good player for the Brewers last year and also a pretty good player for the Astros when he came over. And the Astros obviously expected a lot more than this. And when they got Carlos Gomez. So I'm pretty sure the Mets are happy that they got Yoan Cespedes over Carlos Gomez now. And sometimes the worst things that happen in baseball, they happen for a reason. And it's kind of funny because the Mets, I think they definitely lucked out with not getting Carlos Gomez for the deal falling through the table. Because after that, I allowed them to shop another player, and they found, I think, a better player, a much better player right now. And Yoan Cespedes, and he has proven to do so because he's not playing as poorly as Gomez. I'll try to find Cespedes' stats for you. Do a little bit of a comparison. So let me pull Cespedes up. Just take a second. I actually did not prepare this segment. So let's take a look at Yoan Cespedes' stats. Okay, I just got them. Yoan Cespedes, batting average, 287 compared to 182. He's getting hit, 28, 29% of the time. And Gomez is getting hit 18% of the time. That's 10% better. 12 home runs already for Cespedes. Zero for Carlos Gomez. OPS of 1,013 for Cespedes. 486 for Gomez. That's awful. And just going through this, I definitely think the Astros, they definitely need to make a change because you cannot have that in your lineup. Let me see if the Astros are playing tonight. Let me see if he actually is in the lineup or not. It'll be interesting to see because if you want to have a guy that bad in your lineup, I don't think he's batting that high. I wouldn't imagine he'd be batting that high because they're that bad, then oftentimes they're not going to be working out for you. They are not playing tonight, but let's see where he was from the lineup last night when lost to the Red Sox. And I'll be sure we'd be doing a manager check. A big poppy. That'll be a little bit later in the show. Let's check the box score. And there, Carlos Gomez. Wow. Batting seventh over Preston Tucker. We'll check Preston Tucker's stats. Preston Tucker, wow, that's not better. 176 average, so I can see why Gomez is ahead of him. Let's see what Castro's behind him. I thought Castro was a little bit better than this. 209. Jump Castro over Gomez and push Gomez and Tucker down one spot. I think Gomez should be batting 8th, Tucker 9th, Castro 7th. Probably make more sense, but, A.J. Hinch sort of struggling right now since his team is doing not too good. Nothing's really going their way, and they are just trying and praying and hoping for a break, and Carlos Gomez is not doing that to them. Right now, they are 15-24, 385 winning percentage. They are on pace right now to win. Listen to this. On pace right now, the Astros, who made the playoffs last year, on pace to win 62 games. Now, you're probably thinking, what's their record going to be? Well, do the simple math. They're going to be 62-100. Can you believe that? After the Astros, did amazing last year. I think should have won the division. Can you imagine them reverting back to a 100 loss season? Because right now, they are on pace to do that. They are on pace to be that bad. That's pretty surprising. That really is. One of the more surprising win totals, too. Chicago Cubs, they're on pace to be the best team of all time. Beat the Mariners by 6 games. They're on pace right now to be 122. And what am I doing? Yes, they're on pace to be 122 wins and 40 losses. Incredible. Flip the spectrum. You go to the Braves. 9-27 right now. The Braves right now, they are on pace to have 40 wins. And therefore, meaning they are on pace to go 40-122 to be the worst team of all time. So we could see some cool things going on. We could see the Astros revert back to 100 losses. We could see the worst team of all time this year. And we could see the best team of all time this year. Baseball is alive, and it is exciting. We are a quarter of the way through the season, and we are halfway through the show, and we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we are going to be talking about David Ortiz and how he is one of three players with 500 RBIs and 600 doubles. I'll tell you who he stacks up with next, and I'll also ask the question, should anybody even pitch to Big Poppy? That's next.
I come from where the rivers meet the sea. It's part of why I'm so wild and fancy free. I was early in the crazy way. My folks.
We're back in Inside Mobile talking about the Rocky Door fight, the Tigers rotation, and Carlos Gomez, and should he still be in the lineup? Also, getting into some rules and talking about catcher hopping. Players be allowed to hop the catcher. The spark from the Army player, softball player, hopping the catcher. Rob Manfred might want to take a closer look at that. Now we'll get into David Ortiz and how. Listen to this. One of three players with 500 home runs and 600 doubles. Guess who's he's tied with? He's tied with Hank Aaron and Barry Bonds. That is impressive. The most impressive thing, though, is Hank Aaron. Do you know why? Because Barry Bonds supposedly was juiced up. And I am with that suspicion, you could say. Because there's just so much evidence out there. So, David Ortiz, Hank Aaron, one of the best players of all time. And David Ortiz has just proven it once again yesterday with his walk-off double. We'll get to that in a moment. Now, quickly, we're going to get into talking about Gerrit Cole and the Cubs and the Pirates in their season series. And after Gerrit Cole pitched 8 shutout innings yesterday, super proud of him. And guess what he said? He said, the Cubs are not the best. I quote, I don't really think they're the best team in baseball. Now, you hear him say that, and then let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's go inside the season series and see, maybe Gerrit Cole has a point. Maybe he is right. Well, the numbers certainly don't say so. Cubs 5-1 against them. And listen to their run differential. The run differential of the Cubs beating them is plus 25 in 5 games. They're beating them by an average of 5 runs, and Gerrit Cole, ignorantly, I do not really think they are the best team in baseball. Now, don't get me wrong, the Pirates aren't a bad team, and the fact that the Cubs are beating them by an average of 5 runs per game this year, that's incredible. Incredible, and the only thing that stopped the Cubs was Gerrit Cole's dominance, and the Cubs had John Lester going a no-no yesterday that I was getting a little bit worried about, because, you know, Jake Arrieta, John Lester, that rotation is dominant. Absolutely dominant. One of the more interesting things is the Pirates and the Cubs actually do stack up to each other, pretty much, give or take a few, you know, numbers, offensively. But guess what? The pitching is the difference. Pitching is the difference in baseball. Everybody says defense wins championships in football. Pitching wins games in baseball. If the other team can't score, then, I mean, you're usually going to score a run. I mean, it's not going to be a 0-0 deadlock forever. And the Cubs are proving that pitching and offense combined like they have it is an unstoppable force, and it's enough to win them 122 games, which is what they're on pace to do. And it's just incredible how far ahead they are of the second and first best team in baseball last year. The Cubs right now are 27-9, Pirates 19-17, and the Cardinals 20-18. The Pirates and the Cardinals, 8 games back at the Cubs. Wow. Get this. Cubs, third best team in baseball this year. Pirates, second best team. Cardinals, first best team. It may be a full flip of the spectrum. Cubs win the division. Maybe Pirates host yet another National League Wild Card game. It's like, put it on your calendar pretty much now. And the Cardinals might either make the playoffs or don't make the playoffs. So the Cubs don't slow down and they just run off to 122 wins. Then I don't really see the Pirates of the Cardinals catching the best team in baseball, but you never know. We've seen crazier things. I don't think we've ever seen anything crazier than that. Teams winning, you know, 125 games, possibly, because that is what it might have to take to beat the Cubs this year. That's what I might have to take. All right, let's get into the numbers for the Cubs and just how amazing their offense is right now. Anthony Rizzo, 11 home runs, 34 RBIs. Wow. Let's do the math. 27 plus 9. 36 games. What's 36 divided by 34? He is averaging... let's get this. 34 divided by 36. He is averaging 9.4 RBIs. No, 0.94 RBIs per game. He's practically averaging an RBI per game. I mean, if you can bank on him driving in a run for you every single night, I mean, it might happen, you know, once or twice, which it hasn't happened only once or twice. And he is just on a roll. I mean, a amazing roll that we've almost never seen before. And if he continues this, this is even more impressive. 34 RBIs this far into the season. It just doesn't happen. You know what I mean? It usually does happen this way. And if you multiply everything out and you do the math, he's on pace to have 153 RBIs now. It does not break the record of 191, which was even more impressive. But 153 would be certainly a lot. If you do the home run tallies, or this far into the season, he is on pace to have 50 home runs with 153 RBIs. Tell me those aren't MVP numbers. You're wrong. 50 home runs with 153 RBIs, that is what Anthony Rizzo is on pace to do. Let's talk about his teammate, Ben Zobrist, also playing amazing. Let's talk about his numbers right now and his projected numbers. Ben Zobrist, 5 home runs, 28 RBIs, so a little bit behind Zobrist in the RBI total, but a little bit of ways behind him in the home run total. But we'll still do the math for fun. We'll see how much Zobrist is going to hit this year. Zobrist is on pace to have 23 home runs. Not bad. We'll check out the RBI front, and he is on pace in that category to join his teammate with 126 RBIs. I mean, can you imagine that? Just those two guys, RBIs alone, they are on pace together to drive in 279 RBIs combined. And that's just Chris Bryant and Ben Zobrist, 280 runs. Are you kidding me? That is fantastic. Absolutely amazing. And you really never see that. Again, they are on pace together, 279 RBIs. That is amazing. Let's go to some more teammates. You can check out Chris Bryant, how many home runs this young pace to hit. We'll check that out. Again, Anthony Rizzo, he is on pace to hit 50 home runs. Let's get these numbers down. 50 home runs from Anthony Rizzo. That would be something, because we don't see 50 home run seasons that often anymore. Ben Zobrist, he is on pace to hit 23 home runs. Chris Bryant, he has 6 right now. So if you do the math and you do the projection formula, then you come out and you reach, he is on pace for 27, which is not bad, but not Anthony Rizzo style. Addison Russell, he's been hot lately against Pirates. He had 2 home runs in the series, 2 big home runs for that matter. Russell is on pace, again, 4 home runs right now. On pace over the course of a 162-game season to hit 18. Again, double digits, not bad. Dexter Fowler, he has 3 right now. You do the math once more, and you find that Dexter Fowler is on pace to hit 14 home runs. So now, do all the math. You do 50 for Anthony Rizzo, 27 for Chris Bryant, 23 for Ben Zobrist, 18 for Addison Russell, and 14 for Dexter Fowler, and you get a total, just in those 4 players alone, 132 home runs. Now, that is impressive. 4 players alone hitting 132 home runs, that doesn't happen. That just does not happen. Now, let's even do more math. I mean, if you say the Cubs, they get a ton of players on base. So, let's say they average they average 2 RBIs per, we'll say 2.5 RBIs per home run. So you multiply that out, and you get a number of 330 RBIs per Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant, Ben Zobrist, Addison Russell, and Dexter Fowler on home runs alone. And remember, we talked about Anthony Rizzo and Ben Zobrist, just their RBIs. They're on base right now combined. Anthony Rizzo is on pace to have 153 RBIs. Zobrist is 123. That is, no, 127. That's 279 RBIs combined. That's not happening in today's game, and that is certainly impressive by the Cubs. And it shows in their home run numbers right now. They have 42 so far. That is tied for 6, so good there. But the more important thing, home runs are nice, but runs are even better. They have scored 214 runs so far. That's first in major leagues. And their pitching, it's been helping out a lot, too. Jake Arrieta, 1.29 ERA. His first best on the staff. Go to second best. It's not that bad either, 1.77. Who's the third best on the staff? Oh, John Lester also has a sub-2 ERA, 1.888. Just keep going with 8. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the fact that Gerrit Cole is saying, I don't really think they're the best team in baseball. Check the stands, Garrett, and check the fact that they're beating you by an average of 5 runs per game. That's pretty impressive from the Chicago Cubs, and also pretty impressive that they are on pace to win 122 games this year, which will break the 2001 Seattle Mariners by 6 whole games. And the Braves, they're on pace to win 40. So, two opposite ends of the spectrum. Pretty interesting baseball right now. Now we're going to go to the Astros, and I talked a little bit about it earlier, pitching to Big Poppy. And A.J. Hinch, yesterday, he continued to pitch to Dave Ortiz with first base open after the wild pitch. There were 2 strikes on him. Now the question is, should, you have continued to pitch to Dave Ortiz. And with first base open, it was a 2-2 count. If I'm a young pitcher like the Astros have on the mound, I'm not going to let Dave Ortiz beat me. That's just not what I'm going to let happen on this mound. Not a guy that his whole career has been known for the clutch moment. You just don't let that happen. And a lot of people say, oh, if the wild pitch would have never happened, then this would have never been the scenario. But if the wild pitch would have never happened, that double would have scored no matter what, right? Let's just take a look at Ortiz's stats so far this year. He's batting 320, 10 home runs, 33 RBIs, and the OPS is at 1,101. And David Ortiz's farewell season, you're going to see some pretty gaudy numbers. And he has some really, really gaudy numbers right now. And if you do the math, what you end up seeing from David Ortiz, listen to how many RBIs he's on pace to have right now. Similar to Anthony Rizzo, 149 RBIs in his farewell season. Okay? Then you go to the home run front, and he has 10 home runs right now. He's just a little bit behind Rizzo in almost all the categories right now. And you see that he is on pace to hit 45. Now, you might be asking, why in the world would David Ortiz be retiring when he's batting 320? His numbers could look like this. 320 batting average, 45 home runs, and 150 RBIs. That would definitely be enough to win the Triple Crown. I mean, have you ever seen a player go out like Dave Ortiz has? I mean, it would almost be impossible. How would he go out batting 320, hitting 45 home runs and 150 RBIs? Because that's what he's on pace to do right now. Nobody goes out like that. And one of the things Dave Ortiz has also said is he wants to win a World Series with that. And that would just be the perfect ending. Better than Peyton Manning because, he didn't have the best numbers. But if he goes out like this and he helps his team like this, and if he wins a Triple Crown, which would almost certainly guarantee an MVP, that'll be the ultimate way to end his career. And then you ask, why would he be going out? I think he's leaving because, he's at an older age, and it takes a toll on your body to get ready for the season. And he definitely does some pretty massive preparation to get ready for the long season. And it's pretty impressive what he's been able to do over the course of his career with the Red Sox and the Twins. Twins, not so impressive, but the Red Sox were pretty impressive, and he is just Mr. Clutch. And it was a cool celebration yesterday when they threw all that powder on him. I definitely liked it. All right, it is our last break on the show. We have 15 minutes after this, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about, is it time to expand replay, specifically on foul tip reviews? And something happened yesterday in Colorado. We'll get to that next about expanding the replay system. That's next. we're back after a quick 30-second break on Inside MLB, and it is now time to get into, is it time to expand replay? We're just talking about Big Poppy, should he pitch him, and the Cubs' gaudy numbers, and how they're on pace to do, you know, break every single record in mankind baseball history, which is fantastic. Now time to talk about expanding the replay system, and more specifically, foul tip review, should it be a reviewable play? And last year, one of the more memorable ones is when Mark Reynolds, he supposedly fouled it off, which he obviously didn't. Next pitch hit a home run. Yesterday, Mets, Rockies, Carlos Gonzalez obviously did not foul tip the ball, but supposedly he did to the umpire. And Terry Collins got tossed, and the next play, double happens, and the Rockies pretty much won the game because of that, and not pretty. And is it time to expand the replay system? Is it time for Major League Baseball to go and realize that, you know, foul tip should be reviewable? And should they be reviewable? And one of the interesting comments I've heard about this is managers should get 2 foul tip reviews per game. Because if Major League Baseball would just go out and say, yeah, we're going to make this a reviewable play, then it would definitely slow down the game. It would probably be the slowest, most important game you've ever seen. Because managers might be, you know, challenging an 0-0 pitch on the first play of the game. Oh, get out of the headset. We're going to challenge that. No, don't do that. It would just be a really slow game. All right, let's check out tonight's ticket. We'll see who's doing what. We're going to talk about the Hap attack. Jay Hap going for the Blue Jays. And he has been on fire. He's 5-0 with a 2.05 ERA. And the Blue Jays will be hosting the Rays for the first time this season when the team's beginning a 3-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. Toronto, Tampa Bay have played 7 times this season at Tropicana Field, with the Blue Jays winning 4 of the games. So, obviously, Hap, Smiley, 2 great pitchers so far in the season. Smiley has been on the wrong end of the decisions. Hap has definitely been on the right end, but both great pitchers so far this year. Let's talk about the freeway series, Los Angeles Dodgers versus the Los Angeles Angels. And it's going to be an interesting game because Japanese sensation Kenta Maeda takes the ball opposite Matt Shoemaker when the Angels and Dodgers open a 4-game series split between Dodger Stadium and Angel Stadium. The Dodgers will host the first 2 from Los Angeles tonight. And changing that up will be Rick Porcello in Boston, but it seems like that will not happen because it is postponed, and the Kansas City weather did not help that out. And let's just do a weather report here on Inside MLB. That'll be pretty fun. I don't think we've done any weather reports lately, so let's check out the Kansas City weather report. And there actually is going to be some rain all night. There's 70% chance of rain now, 58% chance of 7. 59% chance of 9, then 70% at 11, 70% at 1, 57% at 3 a.m. So, sort of surprised that they rained out the game, but it's understandable with the radar, and it'll be clear for tomorrow. Hopefully, a little bit of rain, you know, in the midnight hour, but Rick Porcello will be good to go tomorrow. And one of the more surprising things, Rick Porcello, when he was signed by the Red Sox last year, he was sort of expected to do it all, and he didn't really use his changeup much. 8.8% of the time. This year, he's been doing extremely well. Uses him change up 16.6% of the time, and that might have to do with his success. Now, let's get into Brad Ausmus. And right now, he is definitely on the hot seat. And he said yesterday, I might get fired. We're done talking about it. We're beating dead horse. And most managers, they don't do what Brad Ausmus is doing. They don't really go straight to, you know, I might get fired. But it's obviously a real possibility, and you have to realize it. So Brad Ausmus definitely might get fired, and it's time for our trivia question of the day. Now, you can respond in the chat room on blogtalkradio.com. You just scroll down to the bottom of the page. If you're familiar with the website, you'll be able to type in your answer, and I'll give you the answer to the question at the end. Or if you are online emailing at Fantasy Sports, you can respond via that. And I'll give your answer to the trivia question of the day. So here it is. Who is the all-time home run leader by a Puerto Rican-born player? We're talking about that because Carlos Beltran hits 400. I'll give you a clue. It's not him. So get your response in on the Blog Talk Radio chat room, or if you are on the Lenny Malnick website, put your answer to that. The question is Carlos – my bad. Who is the all-time home run leader by a Puerto Rico-born player? Give your answer, then I'll give you the response to them. And I'll give you some extra credit, too. If you can get one and two, I'll definitely be impressed. Give your answers in right there. And please, no Googling. All right, let's get into talking about a Puerto Rican-born slugger. Carlos Beltran, his 400th home run yesterday. And the question is he a Hall of Famer? And one of the higher Hall of Fame standards is, was he an MVP winner? But I think he is going to be a Hall of Famer. He's not going to be a first ballot, probably like David Ortiz. But it is a possibility that he is a Hall of Famer. If I was a writer, I would definitely vote for him. It would definitely be on my ballot. So is he a Hall of Famer? I'm going to say yes. Now let's get into if you are a fantasy sports player and you play daily fantasy sports, who you might want to pick tonight, or if you're, a beat the street guy like myself, you might want to pick Victor Martinez tonight because he's going up against Jose Berrios, and listen to his slugging percentage against left-handed pitchers. He's batting .583 against them this season with a .369 average and a .414 MVP. So definitely a quality pick if you're into that. I have him on my beat streak, and if you play DraftKings, then pretty good pick there. Even though Jose Berrios is a highly touted prospect. Okay. Joey Votto yesterday, he was in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is one of the more underrated, sports cities where, the fans really get at the players. And Joey Votto, he had to have some fun with the player fans, I guess. And what he did is he faked out the Phillies fan with a foul ball. And we have a caller on the Inside MLB hotline, so we'll bring him on right now to end the show. 317 area code. You are live on Inside MLB. How are you doing tonight?
Good, Benson. How are you?
Good.
That's good. I replied that I think it's Roberto Clemente.
That is incorrect. We'll give you the answer towards the end of the show.
And can I ask you, who would you say are the top-tier pitchers and then the second-tier pitchers in the Major League Baseball?
Well, right now, there probably is a distinction between the top tier and second tier. You have the top tier, you're Clayton Kershaw. He definitely is the upper tier. You get guys like Madison Bumgarner, Max Scherzer, Jake Arrieta. They're all upper tier. There are also the underrated upper tier guys, like John Lester in Chicago, having a fantastic season. He doesn't really get the credit he deserves, but he is definitely, in my mind, an upper tier kind of guy. Move down to the second tier. They might be a second guy in the rotation or a third guy in the rotation. For example, you go to Pittsburgh. Quality pitcher, Francisco Liriano, he's not quite in that upper tier Cy Young kind of guy, but he is in that second tier quality pitcher. And I definitely say upper tier most of the time for most teams. They happen to be the ace. That's why they're the number one. For the second tier, it might be the third, fourth guy, possibly the second guy. But there definitely is a distinction between the guys that will go give you possibly no hitters every day in and day out compared to the ones that might give you a quality start in and start out.
What do you think, like the older pitchers who are doing good, like Lester, you think they're going to have trouble maintaining that through the hot summer and the long season? You think they'll be there at the end? And especially David Price.
I mean, I think guys like John Lester, he obviously is having an amazing season right now with a 1.88 ERA. Had a no-hitter going yesterday until Starling Marte broke it up. So I think it might be a little bit of a struggle for him to finish out the season, but these guys, they prepare so hard during the regular season, off-season, my bad. And I think he'll be good to go for the long run just like he has been every year of his career.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All right. So, again, he gave a pretty good answer to the trivia question. But if Roberto Clemente is not in the top five. So, pretty good guess. But I think if Roberto Clemente died as early as he did die, then it might not have been as big of a problem. So we are going to give the answer to that trivia question in a short 3 minutes. So keep giving us Sam's Blog Talk Radio studio and the Lenny Malik Fantasy Sports website. Give us his answers, and I will reveal the answer in a short 3 minutes. A couple more things to get into. Bronc Holt yesterday was ejected by Joe West after the strikeout. Joe West, he quickly ejected him. Bronc Holt said he was talking to himself. Joe West took exception to that, and he tossed him pretty quickly. So that's that. Yesterday, in the minor leagues, if you do not know, there is a clock that you have to, 20-second, that you have to get into the batter's box. Cardinals minor leaguer Alex Mejia, he struck out on a clock violation. And one of the more funny things was, after he struck out, they actually threw it around the horn. Pretty interesting there. So I'm actually going to give you the answer to the trivia question a little bit earlier than expected. We'll get into it right now. Let me check the answers that we have received. So right now, nobody has given me the correct answer. And the answer is Randall Delgado, 473 career home runs. And second is Gonzalez with 434 home runs. Coming in after that is Beltran, 400 home runs. After that, Orlando Cepeda with 379 home runs. And finally after that, Pudge Rodriguez, 311 home runs. So that is that for our show today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for calling in our caller. And you can always check out our website, MLBinside.com. We have daily articles. And the show is right up there. You can also check out the archived shows right here at blogtalkradio.com. Or they're also archived on MLBinside.com. Again, MLBinside.com. We are live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., except on scheduled dates. And if you want to see the schedule, sign up for our newsletter on MLBinside.com. It's right on the top. Nice and easy. Just put in your email, and we will welcome you to the Inside MLB family. For more next time, I'm Benson Fechter. Have a wonderful Monday. I'll see you Wednesday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Have a wonderful night.